Welcome to Remainders, the podcast that is dedicated to discussing movies, just like we used to in the old days at a little movie store called Suncoast Video, where Patrick and I worked. And we have hit the milestone of 50 episodes last time with the movie RoboCop, which is Patrick's favorite. And today we're talking about a vastly different film, the 2009 film Trash Humpers by Harmony Korine. I don't believe there really is a synopsis that I could give of this film that would properly explain it. I'm not sure there really is any explaining this film. So we're just going to have a great discussion about it. I'm going to say right off the bat that I loved it. But I don't know why I'm even saying that. And I imagine anybody who watches this film would feel the same way. But there's a lot to discover in this film, and I think that is the exciting thing about it. So, Patrick, great to see you today. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And here we go. Trash Humpers, 2009, Harmony Korine.
Hey, man. Good to see you in this early morning edition of Remainders. And I am still reeling from this movie because I'm definitely familiar with Harmony Korine. I had not seen Trash Humpers. I want to make the disclaimer. If you've been listening to the podcast and you see, oh, they're watching Trash Humpers, they're like, oh, what garbage is Patrick making us watch now these days? And no, it's definitely a Darren pick, and I can see why. And I just want to make that clear because, man, I am happy you brought this movie to my attention because this movie is bananas.
Bananas is right. I want to just say quickly that, I don't know, this is like a cool way of finding this film. You know, I have a love for cinema, so do you, and that's why we do this podcast, and I'm sure that's why a lot of people tune in, because, you know, it's nice to connect with people over film and talk about art in general and why you like something, why you don't. And I didn't know anything about this film. However, Harmony Korine is one of those artists that continually shocks me in a way that I haven't been by maybe anybody else. At an early age, I just remember seeing Kids, and that was the first introduction to Harmony Korine for me. And it was so shocking and upsetting in a way for me, especially being young and coming of age, that it was like, I didn't want to watch that film for many years again because I was scared of it. It scared me. And then for many years, his film Spring Breakers, a friend of mine had been telling me, you have to see Spring Breakers. It's so good. And of course, you know, there's a great cast in there, and maybe more of a celebrity filled cast than he'd had worked with in the past. And I remember just really, really wanting to wait to see that film because I was, afraid. Even in my adult life, I'd still hearken back to seeing Kids. Now, Kids is a great movie, don't get me wrong, but it's so upsetting almost, and that I didn't want to enter these worlds anymore. And I that's such a tribute to honesty in filmmaking and such a tribute to somebody who isn't making a film for any other reason than to do it the way that he wishes, and to also impact the audience. And I think that's such a amazing thing to take away because it's affected my life for as long as I've lived. Now, I finally did see Spring Breakers and loved it, but I literally waited until I think last year or the year before that to see it. And it came out in 2013, I think. So that's literally how long I waited because of the impact Kids had on me. The next thing I just want to say about Trash Humpers is, like, now that I've gotten over that hump, no pun intended, of watching Harmony Korine films again, I love The Beach Bum, and I had seen that. That's a very, very satisfying film in a lot of ways, but Matthew McConaughey is so great in it. Then seeing the visual of just these characters and Trash Humpers, I saw that on the New Beverly Instagram, and it was like, you know, midnight showing, Trash Humpers, Harmony Korine, New Beverly, come out and see it on 35mm. And for me, I was like, what is this film? It was just the visual that I was that I saw, and I was like, I've never heard that Harmony Korine did a movie called Trash Humpers, let alone does it looks like this. And I was intrigued right away. And I went to my friend who loves Harmony Korine, and I said, have you seen Trash Humpers? What's this all about? And he's like, I didn't even know about it. So I'm thinking that this film is kind of under the radar for Harmony Korine, and you know, a lot of people hadn't seen it. Now, it's recently been added to the Criterion Collection, and so that's kind of how I had access to it. I didn't go see the filming or the showing at New Beverly, but I did have access to it on Criterion. So as most films that are bold enough to do what they want to do, they might not be as accessible or might not be as talked about when they come out, but they do have that power of growing with age. And I think that's what's happening with Trash Humpers here. Now, we're going to talk about the film, of course. If you're out there, you're like, okay, just talk about how weird this film is, and we will. But that's kind of where I got my funnel into the movie that is Trash Humpers that we're talking about today.
Hell yeah. All right, a lot there. When was that you saw it at the New Beverly?
Well, so I believe they posted about this like 2 months ago almost. Recently.
Okay. I didn't know if this was a couple years ago or not, but not. So yeah, okay. So to go back to a little bit of what you were saying, yeah, I remember seeing kids when I was pretty young, and I was not much older than a kid myself. And I agree with you. That's a disturbing movie, especially more so if you're at a young age watching it, because it's like such a dose of reality. And you know, if you come from like a relatively safe kind of background, you know, you don't really worry about like serious life shit as a kid. I mean, we both grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. It definitely is a dose of reality, and I've only seen it once, and that is definitely one that is like stuck with me ever since. And I agree with you. Like, I'm curious on like what people would think about it. I've seen scenes as an adult, but like I said, like seeing it all the way through for the first time when I was like maybe like 11 or 12. Definitely hit me a lot there. And yeah, it'd be interesting to know like what kind of the reaction is if for adults at the time, like if you were much older in the 90s and saw that for the first time, what the kind of reaction was like to that. Because, and I mean, so Harmony Korine, he did the script for that. That was like his first script when he was like maybe 18 or 19, I think he saw that at a very young age, which was pretty incredible. And it was directed by Larry Clark, who also made this other movie called Bully. It was from the late 90s. Have you seen that one?
But I have not seen it, but I know like Brad Renfro is in it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's another one that is a very disturbing, especially if you see it at a young age, kind of movie. It's just like such a dose of reality for young people. So that definitely, they kind of had a through line there, but yeah,
it's like a mainline dose of reality, I guess. Right. And you're right. Like just experiencing it as, you know, two kids from the suburbs, you're like this upset. This is almost, it's almost like you could, attribute it the same way that like, it would be like seeing a movie about like fentanyl use or something like that now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it is just the age. So I'm not saying, maybe I saw it at too young of an age. I don't think that's an issue, but like I just didn't have the understanding of the world at that point as you know, like an 11-year-old probably wouldn't most of the time. So yeah, that definitely stuck with me. And then, so I haven't seen either of the ones you mentioned, Beach Bum or Spring Breakers. I've been meaning to watch Spring Breakers ever since it came out, and for whatever reason I just never got to it. I
honestly feel like that might be your favorite Harmony Korine movie when you see it. Just it might that be. Would be my thought.
I mean, it seems like it's got a good vibe. I mean, I love Gummo is such a great movie, and it's got so many images that are just like, you definitely understand it's from the same director as Trash Humpers, but Gummo is a little bit more, I mean, mainstream is not the right word, but it actually has like a few more characters that you kind of follow. It's got like an actual soundtrack that kind of like connects a lot of the scenes. The soundtrack's awesome. It's like death metal and Buddy Holly and Madonna, like all wrapped into one. So I even had to watch one of the scenes when the kid's like, he's he tapes all this Civil War together and he starts working out in front of the camera to Like a Prayer from Madonna. And it's just, I remember seeing that as a kid. I was like, what is going on with this direction? I love it so much. Sick Boy kind of vibes with the with that movie. It's so great. Now, you said you have not seen Gummo?
No, I haven't. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? We're talking about all these films that I have seen. And that's like one I believe is on the map for most people for this director.
Yeah, I think it's definitely his most well-known because it definitely got the most attention like when it came out. The opposite of Trash Humpers. That one I think you would definitely dig. So, I mean, Trash Humpers came out in 2009. And yes, it doesn't seem like it's a very well-known. I mean, this is, and we can get into it. Like, we start actually dissecting it a little bit, but like, I mean, this is barely a film. I mean, it is, and that's kind of the point that I get to it. It's kind of my first reaction is that, like, it looks like found footage. And from what I understand, it's like he was basically going for an aesthetic of like, what would it be like if you just found a videotape on a sidewalk of these elder degenerates doing crazy shit? And it's just a VHS tape that you found and you watched, and that was the movie. And so it's basically challenging the idea of like what movies are, what film is, what art is in general by its entire existence, because it's, I mean, there's no plot whatsoever. It's literally just elder degeneracy and hedonism. And that's what's going on for barely an hour and a half.
Yeah. And when you first start to watch the film, you're not sure what's coming next. And that is kind of the excitement about it. There's excitement in that with like the way it's shot on film. I mean, we're talking about 2009, and at 2009, nobody was saying, let's have the cool VHS aesthetic. I mean, he was years ahead of going back to a format that nobody would use, let alone a director who's like now has some notoriety in his career. He's going back to shoot like this film that has no plot and makes no sense on VHS. Like that is badass as it fucking gets. And, you know, there's something about filming this in VHS that makes it even better as the viewer, because you're not sure what's going to come up. You're not sure about these characters. It does feel like found footage because of it. I mean, all of us that were able to have access to a video camcorder, I mean, I know I did. I made home movies. I mean, I still have those VHSs that are completely spliced together on my own. It was our first introduction to, if you're excited about it, you know, film and you love it, you have this want to make stuff. And that was the first time I remember being able to say like, whoa, I could like make a movie on this thing, you know. It has that feel in Trash Humpers, almost like they have like, yeah, like some friend that's following them along. For anybody listening that hasn't seen the film, there's three, they're wearing masks, but you kind of can't tell and you're not sure what's going on, if that is like supposed to be like their look, or if they're actually wearing masks on purpose, or if they're just like, you know, some kind of aliens. Like it's so shocking when you look at them, and scary, but also funny. Like there's fear, but there's also like humor in this. And of course the things that they're doing as they like go from, it's like vignette to vignette almost, you know, because it's like little sections. Again, there's no real plot. It's not like they're going and leading up to something. It's just like little sections. So every time you enter into one of those little plots, you're like, what's going to happen now? And that coupled with the VHS look, it's like, there's some mystery in here. There's some horror, there's some comedy, and it's exciting. And to watch it, it's kind of like almost too, like those skateboard videos that me and my friends used to make, you know, when we were like growing up, like this feels so familiar to so many people, but also foreign. It's got so much going on.
I mean, if you just look at some of the scenes, I think a lot of people's first reaction would be like, if this is like outtakes from like Jackass or something, especially the scenes. Sure. I mean, it looks so much like Jackass, especially the scenes that like Knoxville and Spike Jones are doing when they're dressed up as old people skateboarding. Like, yeah, it's so close to that, that I feel like it has to be Harmony basically kind of either commenting in that, or just borrowing that aesthetic, or just doing something with that, because it's so close to it. That's by far what I was thinking of, like, half the time. Like, this is like, if like,
yeah, Jackass, like bad grandpa or whatever.
Yeah, like, I didn't see that one, but like, I remember, like, the from watching the show, like, they were just, that was like a common thing when they were dressing up as old people, and especially in the movies they do that too. So that has to be something that was like in his mind, because this is 2009, so this is like well after like the first two Jackass movies, and like when it was like at the height of its popularity. So
That's interesting. I never really thought of it, but of course it does have that for sure. Yeah. And then I also thought about just the idea of like being an older, like, of course, like these, I'm looking at it right now. It's like, it's still frightening, and I've seen the film. But like the idea of like, as an older person, as like your grandpa, you wouldn't think of them doing anything like these characters do in this film, which is another shocking thing, right? Like if you were like, I don't know, 80 years old going out there doing these things, like people would say, oh, they're senile or they're whatever. Like they wouldn't think that they're actually out there, like, you know, causing vandalism or anything on purpose. And that's definitely what these characters are doing.
I see it as the ultimate form of freedom. That's kind of how I was watching this movie. It's like these elderly people are heathens doing degenerate things, and with zero fear of like repercussion. And it's just the ultimate form of freedom throughout the entire movie. It's like all these horrible, sick things that they're doing. At no point is anybody like worried about like what is going to come of it, or who it affects, or how it hurts anybody. It's just legit hedonism throughout, and they're enjoying it the whole time. And that's basically what I was taking away from it. Is like, this is the ultimate form of freedom to like the nth degree.
Yeah, there's like definitely some scenes too that you're like, whoa, is like, are they really going to physically harm themselves or other people when they meet up with the other trash humpers, kind of? And there's that guy playing the guitar, you know, I'm talking about that scene later on. I was actually genuinely like, oh my God, somebody's going to get shot here, or like, you know, there's going to be a death that we're going to see. But that never actually occurs. It's just that it's the idea that it could happen at any minute, because like you said, there's no repercussions, there's no consequences for their actions. You don't even kind of know what world they're in, you know.
It's the world of Harmony Korine's mind if you had ultimate autonomy in 50 years. I think that's what that's what I was seeing it.
Well, we talk about seeing this film too with like an audience, or we talk about seeing films with an audience, and wouldn't this be fun to see at New Beverly with a bunch of people that are, you know.
Well, it would have to be at somewhere cool, like the New Beverly or the Music Box. If you went to see this at the AMC, the AMC would be playing this, or anybody would just what's this movie? I'm going to walk into it. Not that anybody would ever get that opportunity, but you definitely have to. It would be substantially better watching it with a more enlightened crowd.
Yeah, definitely an art house film in that way. Yeah. I think I read somewhere when I was looking at reviews for the film, somebody had said, and I think this was from RogerEbert.com, that like, if it had not been Harmony Korine, who's like sort of the cool guy director, you know, would this even have anybody talking about it? Well, it's like of course not, you know. That's the cool thing that happens when you make fucking great art, and that resonates with people, is that you can start to make other things that people are going to notice, you know, like if you or I had made this film, maybe you know, people would look at it, but they wouldn't be walking away saying that was genius. They'd probably say, oh, this guy was fucking around, had some of his friends go out at night and just like, you know, fuck up the neighborhood.
I think it would have been even better if I saw something where he, like I was saying, like he was going for an aesthetic of like a legit found videotape, not like just found footage, but just like you find this videotape in the trash and you just watch it. And I saw somebody commenting on that it would have been even better if like he didn't even put his credits at the end. So at the end, it still shows like directed by Harmony Korine and like who was in it, like in the VHS format. But like, I think it would have been even more effective if that just wasn't even in it. And it was just like this complete end to end found footage of depravity that you may or may not find in the garbage with some urine on it or something.
Yeah, totally. And that's also the kind of like,
and that goes into like you were just saying, like whether like who makes Trash Humpers is kind of a big deal. If you don't know who the director is, you're going to have a different reception from somebody who like Harmony Korine, who's already an established auteur, and you kind of understand his voice already.
Yeah. Who makes Trash Humpers is important. And that's, you know, again, you could be anybody making it, but you've got to make that one, you know, pop song, you know, to be able to have people looking at you to see like what you're going to do next. I mean, that's just the way our society works.
Now, it affects how the audience reacts.
Right. And now it doesn't matter if anybody watches it or that, you know, that's up for debate. But yeah, I mean, Harmony Korine is definitely somebody people are looking at. And a lot of people like us who love film and love badasses that do what they want are waiting to see what he'll do next. The idea of the found footage or the idea of like finding the VHS is kind of the idea behind the original Terrifier films. I forget, did you say you've seen those or no?
I'm very familiar. I haven't seen any of them though. I saw some of the, I think the original, because they were screening on Joe Bob. The original was like the vignettes, right?
Yeah, so yeah, that's what so I was going to say. Yeah. Again, ahead of his time, I feel, in this film. And that's why I think it's aging so well. It's probably like the first, you know, film that people are like, I'm going to shoot on VHS and I want this aesthetic, even before it became cool. And then also the idea of like, it's scary as hell to find a film that, you know, has this shit going on. Like, so the audience out there, we haven't really talked about a lot what they're doing, but like, they are trash humpers. They are like, literally having sex with like trash cans. They are meeting up with kids in the schoolyard. I mean, that scene with the little boy in the beginning when they're talking to him and like kind of making fun of him, and then also just kind of like also like some weird way like vibing on his level. There's a lot of disturbing stuff happening, but that's that. So to get back to Terrifier, that's the idea of the first one. It's not about that clown that everybody sees at first. It is. I mean, he's in it, but there's a bunch of like wild and crazy things that happen on this VHS tape that like a babysitter and the family that she's babysitting find. And then all of a sudden, of course, it becomes real, right? Like this is, you know, your nightmare is coming real from what you're watching. And that's a hugely successful, like I just saw Terrifier 2, which was fucking amazing and fucking great. Like, it's just getting better. Mm. And I will say, though, like, very disturbing. Very, very, very disturbing. Like my girlfriend, I would never even let watch that film. But it's kind of the same idea as Trash Humpers. It's like this found, you know, it started like that. And obviously, that's like an idea that people are... they like, you know, there's the mystery in that, like, what is this? Do these things exist in the world? And like, where is it? Is it around the corner? Like, who dropped this off here? Like, how did I find this tape? Like, are these people in my backyard? When I go to sleep at night, are they going to crawl in through my window? Like, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's interesting. So it's like the original, well, I don't know if it's the original, but like, certainly what kind of brought found footage into the mainstream was like Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
I'd say like in 99, that was probably, I mean, I'm sure there were like, there's certainly more like found footage vibes before that, but I feel like maybe that was kind of the one that brought it into the mainstream public thought process.
Which of course was hugely popular, but also that film wasn't shot on VHS. Like this is shot fully on VHS.
True. I guess I'm just thinking of like that being like right before social media, like a good 5-10 years before social media was like, the norm, and kind of like how that has like kind of shifted into it. So it's like, I mean, I feel like you almost have to do the VHS because I mean, Trash Humpers without the VHS aesthetic is literally just somebody on their iPhone just following people around and uploading shit to YouTube then.
So. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, literally anybody would make this film now that was a student at Columbia, you know?
So like, yeah, that's why I'm thinking like the VHS aesthetic is almost a way of like establishing, like not necessarily this was like, you know, social media, but like it definitely gives, it separates it a little bit from like the stream of videos you're finding on your feed anyway. So,
right.
Not again, that you'd
putting, putting this in context, I mean, in 2009, I guess there were cell phones, but like not ones you could film on that would actually make a film, you know?
It was getting pretty, I don't know. That's a good question. It was becoming the norm, certainly in the late 2000s. I mean, YouTube was definitely the vibe already established. So, and again, like with the Jackass aesthetic of just having the home recorder kind of bullshit.
Run and gun.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. That is an interesting thing that will like certainly evolve a lot more, but I just find it interesting. Like the found footage aesthetic that was established, and then social media, obviously, like everything else, is going to substantially change it for better or most likely worse, but we'll see.
Which is a great thing. It's like Harmony Korine could make this film, but with that knowledge of social media, and make something even more like exciting and impactful, because that's what artists do, right? Like they adapt to what's happening in the world and then comment on it.
What was the comment about the conjoined twins that were eating pancakes with soap on it? What do you think is the commentary on that? Because that was one of the images, one of the many scenes that like stuck with me the most. What was that anyway? So it's like the two guys with the head thing, it made it look like they were like conjoined twins connected at the head. Is that what he was going for?
I guess. I don't know. I mean, it was a shot. Again, it's sticking with me because it was so shocking. And they're like, come on, put on more. By the way, that's his wife. That's the woman role in there, which is crazy. God, I mean,
her singing is like, it's just nightmare fodder. It's just like, it's just screeching, and it just like gets under your skin the whole time.
Well, she's the one who's like forcing them to put more soap on the pancakes, and then they're eating it. And I'm willing to bet that really was soap in there.
That's what I was 100% thinking. That was absolutely one of the first things I thought. I was like, I wonder if that's soap or soap stand-in.
Yeah, and to be like what he's trying to say, I haven't even thought about that until you just asked me that question.
I was mostly joking. There's nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Even if there is something behind it, there's no way we're going to figure it out.
That's kind of the point.
Even if he knows there was something there. Like, no, I was completely joking.
And that's the thing. It's like, I was like, how am I ever even going to try to figure out anything that's happening in this film? Like, you can't, you know. For someone to really like philosophically get down and like fine tooth comb this and say, this is what the director was trying to say, would be you'd almost laugh at that, you know.
No, you'd be also missing the point. There's nothing, it's your reaction that what any artist creating this type of art would be going for is like the reaction of the audience in the most fucked up way possible.
I mean, unless you're like pretty fucked up in general, I don't think you're really watching this for entertainment either. You know, it's just like, it's not like, oh, I'm going to throw on trash humpers, you know, and this is going to be the greatest night of my life. It's like, it's really something that you have to experience. I almost like kind of liken it to the films that Warhol was making. Like, they're not great films or anything like that. I don't know if you've ever seen any of them, but I think he's just like, kind of like, I'm going to make a film and I'm going to do it. You know, it's going to be out there and people can experience it if they want. Like a lot of times those Warhol films play when you go to see like, you know, exhibits of his, just like here's another arm of Andy Warhol's insane world and enter in if you like, you know?
Right. No. Yeah. This is certainly post cinema. You can barely call it a film. It's not intended to be enjoyed. It's intended to be reacted to, and ideally in a pretty disgusted way. That's kind of definitely what I was taking away from it. And again, like I think it's largely just him making a movie that is challenging what a movie is, what art is. And like I said, that's why I think the found footage component, like why he would want it to be purely a videotape you find on the sidewalk, is the ideal setting for watching it. So.
Yeah, and Harmony Korine is a very interesting guy for a lot of reasons. I saw as I was looking into him after I watched this film that he's going to, or maybe it's over now, but he has exhibited a bunch of his artworks, his pieces in LA here. And I wanted to go to the exhibit, but I'm not sure if it ended or not. Anyway, I was like, oh, this guy is very talented, and he's not somebody that like you hear in the mainstream all the time talked about. But he's definitely right up there with like some of the great directors. I mean, his work is looked, but maybe because of the subject matter and what he's exploring and what he's taking on, you got to see Spring Breakers. I would almost love to like talk about that on here, along with Beach Bum. Is excellent. But again, vastly different movies from what we're talking about today. And that's the cool thing. It's very like, this is the movie I want to make and I'm going to make it. It doesn't have to like be in his wheelhouse for like what he made last time. You know, it could be like maybe something that he thinks that the audience is going to love, or it might be something he thinks are just going to shock them. But either way, I do think he's like a normal director making films today, that he is thinking about the audience. It's just in like an entirely different way than you're used to in Hollywood.
yeah totally. I mean, disturbing is definitely what he was going for. I was kind of getting taking a step back from it, I was getting a little bit of like a Clockwork Orange vibes, with just not necessarily like aesthetically in the direction wise, but just of like watching people do fucked up shit in a chaotic and nihilist world. I was definitely kind of getting that vibe from it, making me want to rewatch some of those scenes.
A little of the ultra violence, eh?
Mm-hmm. Oh, savage style. Yeah, I haven't seen that one for a minute. Be good to watch it. I loved when she was teaching the kid how to put razors in the apples. That was great.
Nice. Another fucking absolutely shocking thing.
Right. Let's
throw it in there. Razor blades in the apples.
I mean, you said earlier that it's kind of like separating the vignettes. And I think that's even like being way too kind. This is literally just like scenes out of nowhere of people doing shit that you have no context for whatsoever. And some go on for more than 5 seconds, but like most of them are just like shots of psychotic shit like that. And then you just move on to the next one.
Well, and so then, you know, like, you know, in placed in there, then you see like, is that a dead body, like a naked dead body just sitting there in like the, you know, and then it makes the next scene even more shocking. It's like, is the person who's filming the trash humpers come across this dead body?
Right.
Is that a dead body? Did they have something to do with it? Like, there's no explanation. It's just then on to the next. And yeah, like, again, they're not necessarily vignettes, because I think a vignette would have to have some sort of rhyme or reason. And there's none of that. It's just like scene after scene. And they don't necessarily splice together for any kind of end goal.
Oh, man, that ball sack on that dead body was just that's screaming at you while you're watching it. You're just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, this is not a movie for everyone. That is for sure.
I mean, I feel like we're selling it. I mean, if I hadn't seen it, and I'm hearing this discussion, I'd be like, I'd probably check this one out.
Well, yeah, because, you know, us, like, we're into watching anything as long as it's got some kind of, you know, interesting thing to talk about. And this film, more than maybe most films that we've talked about, has a ton to talk about. I mean, you could sit there in the movie store, like the point of this podcast, and talk to a bunch of people that have different views on this film. Like it or hate it, you're going to talk about it.
Yeah, I could understand a lot of people being like, what the fuck is this? Like, get me away from this. But at the same time, still having that visceral reaction, which is, I think, a valid reaction to it. And
well, I'm not going to go and like tell my mom, hey, mom, you know, you're going to really love Trash Humpers.
Right.
This is the film to watch. I actually just saw Chloe Fineman from SNL. Do you know her? She does.
I've watched Seinfeld too, or SNL too much. I'm sure I made her face.
Yeah, she does a lot of the impersonations on there.
Did she do Britney?
Yeah, she did.
Okay, so I saw one skit. It's the Britney one about her doing the voice auditions for her book, which is a fucking great sketch, because there's a couple impersonations, specifically Sarah Squirm doing John Mulaney, I love. So.
Oh, yeah. It's a horse. Oh, I used to do drugs. Yeah. Amazing. So she actually talked about that for a second. It was at the Elysian Theater here, and which holds like 100 people, if that. Oh, nice. And she was doing like a quick thing. And the reason I'm talking about this is like, it was amazing to see like, you know, her do her thing, and she had all these wigs on stage, and then it was like, you know, kind of run and gun, do what I want. And it was super entertaining, super exciting, fun. But her dad at the end of it got on stage, and her dad was like doing all of these kind of like, what you would think or inappropriate things with his daughter on stage, like talking about things that you wouldn't necessarily talk about with your parents and stuff. And I was like, immediately when he got on stage and he was doing some of these things, I was like, oh, this was a household where you could probably talk about trash humpers, you know, like you, yeah. and it kind of was cool in that way, but it also kind of like, it was a little shocking because you're like, whoa, like, you know, they were talking about like orgasms and stuff like that, like together. And I was like, you know, not together, but I'm just saying like things you wouldn't necessarily talk about with your family, or your parents at that. And so, yeah, maybe they would be the only, like, there's certain people out there that have that relationship with their parents where they're like, yeah, you should watch Trash Humpers. It's fucking crazy. Like, I'm not one of them. My mom would, probably say like, who are you, Darren, if I told her to go watch Trash Humpers.
right. Most people are watching Christmas Story or Lord of the Rings on Christmas, but exactly. Maybe that family was watching Harmony Korine movies, so.
Yeah, definitely.
Christmas time coming up, by the way. Lord of the Rings are kind of my Christmas movies. I was thinking about this. They're not Christmas movies at all, but the fact that they all came out in November and like the special edition DVDs when we were working at Suncoast, those came out in November as well. So it's like between 2001 and 2004, it was just like Christmas time, new awesome Lord of the Rings movie. So like it basically set the tone. And now Lord of the Rings, the extended editions are just kind of my Christmas movies.
Talk about a great money business model there coming out right before Christmas, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was actually, I watched a short documentary, like a retrospective on the Lord of the Rings. And that was like, there was not a normal thing before then to like November, December was not like a blockbuster type month back then. That was more prestigious purely for that. And like the idea that they weren't being released in the summer was kind of like a gamble. And now that's normal, obviously, but those are kind of the ones that kind of set the tone for that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, obviously the packaging was everything. Those extended editions were like, looked awesome. You know, yeah. I still have those somewhere,
I got mine right here.
Nice.
One of my favorite trios of DVD that I'll never get rid of. So those things are beautiful. So
like, everything in me when I was in Chicago just the other weekend to not go to my brother's house and put all of my DVDs out of his attic and
right.
Say, I'm taking these with me. I'm taking them all back, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really have anything else to say about this film. I feel like let's wrap it up and then let's talk for a minute. Everybody out there who's listening, don't listen to what I said about my mom. She wouldn't like it, but I bet you will. Just for the fact of seeing a film by this great director, and seeing like what was in his mind, and take it away however you want, enjoy it. For that, you might not watch it ever again, but it's worth at least one watch, to experience a kind of art that might be different than what you're used to.
It might be a one timer. I do think the end has almost, not quite there, but almost a glimpse of like optimism, so I guess that's his wife. I didn't know that. Harmony, Rachel Korine. Mm-hmm. She's cradling a baby in a couple scenes. She's cradling a little baby, an actual baby, because there's a couple scenes with like a plastic doll baby throughout the movie. But she's creating an actual baby, pushing it in a cart. It's still kind of like grating and fucked up, but like it almost borderlines like some sort of semblance of normality, I guess, is a way to put it. Even with all the aesthetics still going on.
Yeah. I don't know.
Just being at the last scene, it definitely stuck with me. I was like, oh, that was not as psychotic as the previous hour and 20 minutes that I just watched. So,
and also I would say, yeah, watching it once just to view it. If anybody ever brings up Trash Humpers, it will be as memorable as Kids was to me. maybe not as shocking in the way that it would affect me in my life. I mean, in Kids, I was worried about getting AIDS, of course, you know, and thinking that, wow, just fucking around could lead to the end of my life. But And not trust anybody, you know. Fuck. So many things to talk about with that film. There's no like immediate worry for me watching this film, but it is something that will stick with me just like kids. And the fact that it was like shocking visually to watch people do what they were doing in the film. And at the end of the day, I would go see it with a cool audience at New Beverly. So yeah, might not go and stream it on Criterion again, but if it was playing at a cool like art house movie theater and in Trash Humber's playing, especially if I have a, like a friend that like likes Harmony Korine or that likes film, I'd be like, yo, but let's go watch Trash Humber's, you know, because it would be like just kind of fun to like experience that with somebody for the first time who's never seen it, you know.
It would definitely be an experience you won't forget. I'll definitely agree with that. That's all I had to think about it. I mean, when you get into it, we're all just trash humpers, if we're consumers, at the end of the day. So, let's just find some, trash to hump and enjoy it and have a good time while doing it. Ultimate freedom. I'm all for it.
Yeah, totally. I just have recently, my TV that I got in 2011 finally died. And it was one of those TVs where like I was having to like, you know, stream through Chromecast from my phone. And it was like impossible to like do any of that. It would always like break and, you know, stop streaming. And it was like the most unenjoyable experience of ever watching a film. So I'd watch it on my, you know, films on my laptop or whatever. And with I told myself this year to really treat myself, I'm going to get a TV during Black Friday. And I finally got something new. But speaking of, it's like changing my world, like, you know, to watch like a film on like something that has like apps in there, like you could like, you know, use with your remote and you don't have to. I never watched.
Oh, it didn't even have that. You're saying, yeah, it wasn't
no,
a smart
my
TV.
Old one. Yeah. No, it was like one I bought in 2011 and I've had it since then. Yeah. And it finally died this year.
That's
so I've been waiting. Yeah, it was a really
good run, though. Rest RIP to that TV. But yeah.
But speaking of, you know, trash and consumerism, like now I've got this TV that like I spent a lot of enjoyable time watching throughout my life. And, you know, in LA, what people do is they just throw their TV on the corner anywhere, you know. And so you're walking down the street and you're like stepping over a TV here, stepping over a couch here. It's a trash filled city for sure. And I can't bring myself to do that with the TV. I have this like connection with it where I'm like, I'm not going to just abandon it on the street, you know, like I need to go to a recycling place. I think here they charge you like $30 to like recycle it. But that's to me is much better for a lot of reasons than just leaving it on the street. But I have this weird kind of connection to it.
Well, you Darren, know? That's the TV you watched Bone Tomahawk and Razorback on. So why? Of course, you have a connection to it. Like, I definitely understand that. So
that's exactly it. Because right. I've had all these great times watching, and I can't abandon this TV. You know, it's almost like I have some sort of weird relationship with it. But anyway, that's kind of an interesting segue that I hadn't thought I'd think about now that we're talking about trash humpers. Yeah, like consumerism and things like that. I've actually placed value on this television that doesn't work anymore. It's a piece of machinery because of the experience that I've had with it.
Hey, yeah, you're not going to find any arguments putting that thing on a pedestal for me. So I got no problem with that. So I'm happy you got the new TV and that it's going well. But don't forget the old one, buddy.
No. Gone but not forgotten.
Right.
So that's a great way to end this. You know, enjoy the trash that you're humping, and we'll, you know, one day it won't be around anymore.
Wiser words have never been said. Love it. Heartily recommend. What else you been watching? Anything good?
Oh man! So my girlfriend had never seen The Sopranos.
So we I've never seen Sopranos.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent series. Some call it the greatest series ever made, which we know is not true because that would be 6 feet under, but
100%.
HBO, as it is a great original programming. And, you know, that was a huge hit for HBO. I watched the I think it's Kings of Newark or something like that. The
as a new movie based on it, like
yeah,
a prequel,
like last
prequel,
year?
I guess.
Prequel, yeah.
Okay.
Starring James Gandolfini's son as him.
Was it? And, I didn't realize that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So I've seen the whole series and everything, but I haven't seen it in a while. So rewatching it with her is obviously really fun. Like getting to go into that world again, started doing that. We've been watching The Curse, which is a new Nathan Fielder show, which is excellent. Mm. Excellent. Talk about like renegade filmmakers. He's right up there with Harmony Korine. He is making so many great subtle commentaries, but not so subtle. It's just a very interesting. Benny Safdie is part of it too, who wrote it with him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure you know his work. If for not anything else, it's Uncut Gems. And is like great cameo in Oppenheimer, of course. But yeah, it's great. I love that show. I know you're not, you know, watching TV too much these days, but I mean, there is a lot that has come out that's been really good. And then the new season of Fargo starring John fucking Hamm.
I saw an image of that and I was like, yeah, I know you mentioned that he was in the new series. I didn't realize Fargo went into season 5. I don't know, like people love Fargo and they need to watch it. Fargo is like one of my favorite movies of the 90s. It's like definitely on my top 10 for the 90s. I mean, we don't have to get too much into it, but like, does it kind of follow the vibe of Fargo or is it like completely detached at all?
No, not completely detached. Definitely follows the vibe. Now, the stories, especially last season, they tied them all together.
Oh, okay.
It was kind of like an aha moment. But it's not necessarily, you didn't think it was trying to do that. And I'm not sure how this one is going to relate to it. This one is set in the 2019, I think. So it's like the first one that's actually set in like current time, kind of.
Yeah.
So much of this season especially is following like a lot of like the plot points of the movie. The kidnapping, different things like that. Like, and I've only seen 2 episodes. They aired 2 episodes back to back so that you
can it actually has to do with the plot. When I said vibe, I just more meant like the dark comedic.
Yes, of course. The vibe is 100% there and it's produced by the Coen brothers. But
so they do produce it? Okay.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, even like full on like same scenario stuff is happening in this season. It's happened a little bit in other seasons, but like it's weird. It's very well done.
Nice. Yeah.
And if you love the movie, you'll love the show. There's no doubt. Especially that first season, it was a knock out of the park because Billy Bob Thornton's in it, and we all know from our current conversations about him and One False Move and others, the man is brilliant.
Perfectly tailored for Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
I actually did watch a full season of a TV show over since the last time we talked.
Really?
I fucking loved it. So I've been watching a few of the old Star Wars, just watching the movies, and I caught up with Andor, which is the show with Diego Luna from Rogue One. It's a prequel to Rogue One, which was a prequel to the original Star Wars. And this show is fucking great. I absolutely loved Andor.
Wow.
And I've been looking at a lot of people reactions because Star Wars fans, I just can't deal with most of the time because they're lunatics, you know, because they love their shit so much, but they have a lot of, I don't know. I don't have to get into it, but like they're psychos a lot of times. But I have seen a lot of diehard Star Wars fans saying like Andor is, people kind of plainly saying like it's one of the best products of the Star Wars since the original trilogy.
Well, we loved Rogue One. I mean, we talked about that, you know. Yeah. Rogue One was so well done.
I loved Rogue One, but even more so, I definitely liked Andor better. Not definitely, but like it's definitely something that I just absolutely enjoyed watching from start to finish. So it's Tony Gilroy. Tony Gilroy did the script, at least worked on the script for Rogue One. He was the writer of like all the Bourne movies. He wrote and directed Michael Clayton with George Clooney. So like heavily into like politics and espionage, very talky scripts, but also like a lot of action stuff. And so he's the showrunner of Andor, and it is unlike anything else in the Star Wars world. It feels more like a Michael Clayton Bourne story just happened to be set in the Star Wars world. And so it's basically all about living under fascism, i.e. like living under the Empire, because it's all in between the time after the prequels, but before Luke Skywalker. So it's in a time of the galaxy when it's just fascist rule. And it's entirely about like what happens in that. Like there's an entire plot point of the character getting radicalized because he was wrongfully imprisoned, because that's an MO of like fascism. You can just throw anybody into prison for no reason and indefinitely. And that plays into like where the story goes and how the characters are reacting. Absolutely loved it. Like it's definitely a show I'm going to watch again because it was so well done. And again, like it kind of rekindled my like enjoyment of the Star Wars. Star Wars was never anything like I was obsessed with as a kid. I've kind of liked it more as an adult, but like it definitely captures like what's awesome about the mythos and the world building that George Lucas brought to that. So
cool. Yeah. You know, obviously Star Wars fans would know that as like, that's the planet that they blow up, right?
Is it Andor?
Andor. Okay.
Yeah, I got confused before I knew anything. Andor is the character. That's the Diego Luna's character.
Gotcha.
Who, spoilers, you know, that's what's great about Rogue One is that they don't even make it out of that movie. So this is a prequel. This is all about him going from an ambivalent person about like the resistance into being full on resistance fighter. So oh, that's okay. Kind of the MO of the show. And yeah, Andor is the character. Andor is the Ewok planet. So
oh, that's right. Yeah. And I love the Ewoks. I don't care what people say. I love the Ewoks. It's like I don't really love Jar Jar Binks, but then again, remember we're just talking about this. The kids love these new the George Lucas like, you know, prequels or whatever that came out in the 2000s. We thought they were trash, but looks like kids these days have found a new life for them.
And, it's whatever you grew up with. The reaction to the prequels, I remember the reaction and how much people fucking hated The Phantom Menace. I mean, The Phantom Menace was the first Star Wars movie I ever saw. And then I saw the original trilogy shortly after that as the prequels are coming out in theaters. And yeah, people really hated those movies. Like you and I remember like vividly, like talking to like younger people. It's like the reaction to it was like pretty insane, actually. A lot of the actors actually went through pretty difficult times, including the Jar Jar Binks actor, because of like how psychotic people were reacting to those movies. But yeah, it's largely what you grew up with. And now that like time has been separated a little bit of that, you realize the prequels are not nearly as bad as people say they were. They're just, I mean, in the original trilogy, I think most people would say like, you know, they enjoy more, but like it's much closer than I think what people made it out to be at the time.
Maybe worth a rewatch. I definitely love that third one.
Well, that's what I'd say. Like, yeah, Revenge of the Sith is substantially better of the original prequels for sure.
So. I think it was hard to watch for the acting for me.
that's a George Lucas. But I mean, that's what's charming. What I like about the Star Wars universe is like he's on record. He's saying like, I'm making a family soap opera. That's all Star Wars is, set in space. And so it's like the bad acting does not bother me at all throughout the
entire. Yeah, I just saw some maybe on Instagram or something that was fed an ad for the new Indiana Jones film. And it's coming out, you know, shot unsurprisingly right before the holidays, but it's being dubbed as a family film, which, you know, you could say that Indiana Jones universe is a family type of film, but I thought it was kind of interesting to sell it that way. Like, go on the movie you got to watch with your family during the holidays, Indiana Jones, you know?
I mean, that sounds like a standard MO from Disney. So
yeah, maybe kind
of their template.
Well, and that brings me to like, did you get the Disney Plus? Is that why are able to watch it?
Yeah, I do have Disney Plus. That's okay. I think it's only available on there. So
I know. Yeah. I think so. And I was going to say, is that because of the Godzilla movie? Cause you were, or the show with Kurt Russell?
No, I still need to watch that. That's on Apple Plus.
Oh, Apple Plus. Okay.
So that's the thing. It's like, I'm so sick and tired of getting all these fucking, yeah. I mean, the Godzilla show, is what I would want to be streaming the most, but I just need to like actually get another streaming service. I mean, ideally, I could just wait for Godzilla to come out and buy that on DVD, but we'll see if that happens or not. But
yeah,
I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't know.
They're kind of going back to
streaming services that I have and don't want. So,
well, they're kind of going back. So I think it's Paramount Plus that we're watching The Curse on. Yeah, I know. I know, dude, it's crazy. But what I'm trying to say is, like, they're kind of going back to like releasing it weekly now because for streamers, that makes sense. You know, a lot of people go into it with like the free trial for, you know, 7 days.
Right.
But if you really like a show, you're like, oh, God damn it, I'm just going to have to watch, you know, till the show's over, and then now you're hooked for however long, and then you forget, life goes by, and then all of a sudden, you know, they just dip into your bank account, you know. And you know, luckily I look at my funds every day, but some people don't, and that's how these streamers are. They love people's stupidity, you know, that they just will never know that, what is this $5 come from? Oh, it's just $5. Who cares? You know?
Right. Like, yeah. No, that's been the standard practice of subscriptions, more so in the last 15 years. So, I mean, it's kind of the gym model, you know, get them to sign up and then just never use it and forget about it. So,
right. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. So yeah, Andor fucking loved it. Speaking of Godzilla, I haven't watched the show. Definitely need to watch it. I am going to see the new Godzilla tonight. It's premiering at the AMC IMAX downtown, the Dolby. Godzilla Minus One. So this is the new actual Japan produced Godzilla movie.
Oh, cool.
And it's getting fucking awesome reviews. So
great. Very
excited to get blasted in the face with that one tonight. So,
well, very cool. We'll just talk briefly. I was in Chicago for the first time in 3 years, and Patrick and I went and saw The Holdovers at the beautiful Music Box Theater. And man, was that cool, huh? What a fun...
Such a good time.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I didn't think I was going to even do that. We had a little time on Sunday where Tom and I were driving around, and he's like, dude, you got to go downtown. You know, we have to, like, because when... Friday was a sub T show. I was out there shooting video and doing photographs and doing liners and stuff for the Plain White Tees. So I was working, but it was cool because, you know, I got to be in Chicago, especially in that little area of sub T on Friday. But again, you know, can't really walk around because you got to be there doing your job. And then we're out in Palatine for Dirty Nellies the next day, which is, you know, it's cool, but it's not Chicago. So on Sunday, we went down to Highland Park and we went to Loud Pizza Records. Shout out to Loud Pizza Records and my friend Mikey, who opened up this great record store, and the Plain White Tees did a signing there. And after it was over, we had some time to kill, and he's like, we got to go, like, let's go look at Wrigleyville. Let's go, like, and it was so cool that he did that so that I could kind of get like a little feel for Chicago since I hadn't been there in 3 years. And, you know, I love it. But the coolest part was, he's like, let's go see a movie at, he's like, The Holdovers is playing at Music Box. And that's when I texted you. I'm like, dude, if you're around, let's go. So we met up at D'Agostino's, had some great cheesy fried whatever it was, not pizza, but yeah, very Chicago little meeting, and then watched a great film with some popcorn, and it was like the capper of the entire thing. So that was great, man. It was great to hang with you and actually see a movie in person, to actually see you in person for the first time since we started this podcast.
It was kind of a trip. I mean, I get to see your face all the time, but yeah, like, not being in the same room, was just kind of continuing the remote work that started in COVID, and we're just keeping it going. And so it was always awesome to see you in person. So
yeah,
get back. I mean, it's always great to, like, our conversation, like, yeah, man, it's good to see you. And then we go right into the movie talk without any hesitation. It was a very seamless conversation. And that's what I was saying, like, the way we talk on this podcast, pretty close to how we're talking in real life.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's what Tom was saying. He's like, yeah, I was like, I really enjoyed meeting your friend. He's like, he really knows a lot about movies, you know? And I'm like, well, yeah. Like, have you listened to the podcast? Come on. And then also, I did my brother's podcast while I was there. So, like, my brother has a podcast called To the Bottom, and it's basically just like interviewing artists from the days of when we were coming up playing music, but also other artists that are around that they meet in their world. And so Mike from the Plain White Tees is in that with him, and they're the co-hosts. And I've been talking about wanting to be on it for a while. They just started releasing episodes this year, and it was a really quick run and gun situation where they have this, like, they have like a trailer and they just like bring it to like places where they want to like capture stuff. So they were behind the thing at Dirty Nelly's and we were just in there back and forth. People would play and then they go and like do this like quick, like, you know, 15 to 20 minute interview with them about, you know, what was it like to perform on stage? You know, what are you doing now? This kind of thing. And so then they got me at like 1:30 in the morning as I was trying to leave. Everyone was pissed off. They're like, come on, we got to go. And Eric is like, no, you got to do at least 15 minutes of the podcast. So I went on there, did a little segment. But one of the things they asked about the most was remainders. And like, you know, you got your own podcast and how are you and Patrick doing? Are you going to keep it going? And I was like, you know, we just talked about that. We're just, if it doesn't sound like fun for us, I go, it's maybe the most authentic thing that I do because I get to talk more openly than I do in any other art form that I, you know, work in. And then also just our conversations, you know, when we do randomly talk to each other on the phone that isn't recorded, we'll say, oh, yeah, are you having fun? Like, is it still cool for you? And if not, then we won't do it, you know? And I think that's fun to talk about with people to say, yeah, this is like fun for us. Like I'm this is pretty early for me to record it at 8 a.m., but sometimes it's got to fit into your schedule. Sometimes it's got to work with your life, but I always do find time for it because it's enjoyment for me. It's not work, you know? So it can feel like that sometimes when you feel like there's an agenda or things like that. But at the root of it, it's like experiencing great movies and talking about them with my friend. Like what wouldn't I want to do about that? You know, life could change and I might feel differently down the road, but right now, like, I love it.
Hell yeah. Love to hear that, dude. I mean, I'm right there with you. Like I said, like our, everything we've always been talking about for 20 years been pretty seamless. And, this is kind of like what we're doing here on the podcast. So I definitely, I'm loving it too. So, I mean, you are able to incorporate your creative life and your artistic life so much. And it just comes through on the podcast. I mean, you just definitely see it. It's like you're a creator, you're an artist who loves art, you know, and that's not always clear with a lot of people. You know, you look at some of the ex-Scorsese, he's an artist that loves art. And like, that's just one example. And it definitely comes through whenever you're talking about these movies.
Yeah, thanks.
Especially when you're talking about Trash Humpers. So.
Yeah, kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of like, what's the meaning of life then, you know, like, what, you know, I don't know. I've been really into like JFK stuff lately. I'm a big fan of John F. Kennedy and like a lot of the idea of Camelot and like a lot of like the idea of what it was like before the assassination. And I read this quote from him a long time ago that I really loved. And it was like, I look forward to an America that rewards achievement and art as we do in, you know, business or statecraft, I believe is a bastardizing of the quote. And yeah, like there's something about our culture that doesn't reward art as much as, I guess you could say, in ways we do, right? We pay for these streamers because we want to watch movies for entertainment and stuff. But, you know, there's only a small section of painters or whatever that make a lot of money in their lifetime. And so nobody really puts a value on it as much as they do in other things. And I know people are different, but for me, I just see so much value in art and like what I take away and how I live my life. And that's just quality of life, right? You know, that's just like wanting to enjoy the time that we're here.
Hell yeah. I mean, definitely don't have, you're preaching to the choir there. I mean, we have all the important stuff that, I mean, I'm interested in so much of like this sociology and just everything, the applications of real life, but then always with the understanding, it's like you do those things for the art, to create a world for art. It's like they're not like separate, they're completely connected, and there's actual reason for creating one because it opens the forum for the other.
When I was out at the show, I was talking with a friend who was performing at Dirty Nelly's with the Plain White Tees and their band One Life. It's also my brother's band, and he had purchased a print from me with the Big Bird on the Blue Line. And so anybody who doesn't know the work, it's Big Bird on the Blue Line in Chicago reading a book on Stoicism. And I talked to you about, like, you know, you introduced me to the idea of Stoicism and how it helped me through a lot of like challenging times, still does. And he was talking to me a lot. He's like, I love the print for a lot of reasons, for what I saw in it. And he's like, I didn't realize until, like, you know, passing it one morning with my coffee, that he was reading the book of Stoicism. And then we went into like a discussion about Stoicism and what it meant to him. And I was like, this is it, you know, like, this is why I do what I do, like, and why people enjoy art. They can experience this stuff differently at any time in their life. You can hear a song differently when you're 60 than you did when you were 20. It means something different. It is the gift that keeps giving.
Love that. And we could tie it back to the holdovers. One of my favorite gags in that is that he just keeps on giving everybody the Meditations by Marcus Aurelius.
Ah, yeah, totally. He has like at that one shot with all of the, like, you know, he's got 30 right. of them.
That was the instant that I fell in love with that movie. Like 30 minutes in when he gives it as the book to the two characters. It's like, ah, this is beautiful. I love it so much.
Holdover is great. I would say still that it's not my favorite Alexander Payne. I hate to put it like that, because I did enjoy the film a lot. Something about Sideways just like was a fucking slam dunk for me. So
yeah, I mean, his movies all age like wine. So I feel like in a couple of years, maybe when you watch Holdovers again, because it is up there with me. I love Alexander Payne. I mean, like Election, Sideways, Bauschmidt, Holdovers in Nebraska, like are all like... like they're all pretty even, just at the absolute top for
he's interesting time, how so. He can speak to an older generation and a younger generation, you know, like Sideways was so like watching that in like 2002 or whenever it came out was like, oh, like, is this like the conversations that adults have? Is this like the way that they like, is this what I will look right, you know, in 20 years or something like that? And then what's interesting about Holdovers is you kind of have both. Yeah. You know, you have the dichotomy of like the younger kid who's trying to come up, and then the teacher who, but they both have their own like challenges in their life and like how they're going to figure it all out. But it's the first film of his where I've seen that kind of together. Maybe Election, you could say, you know, you have the teachers and the students and they're kind of pitted in the same world. So maybe I'm wrong about that. But anyway, I kind of enjoy the way he's able to speak to every sort of stage of life.
No, I mean, most of his movies have definitely been about older males. That's definitely for sure. I mean, I guess a little bit with Descendants, between Clooney and his daughters, and kind of like their perspective. But yeah, mostly about older men. And yeah, you're right. I was thinking the other day about like watching About Schmidt and Sideways in like the early 2000s. So I was like 18 at the time. I'm like, the idea that I like, I'm getting so much out of these stories of like much older people, especially like About Schmidt, like this guy is in retirement. And like, it's just like such a great movie to watch because it's so telling about like what life is in kind of everyday America and the ending of that for About Schmidt wise. So it's just, I mean, he's such a great director. That's why I was so excited to see it. And like, yeah, the Holdovers came out of nowhere. Like I didn't really even know much about it or hadn't seen much marketing before it started at the Music Box. And when I saw it, it was like instantly one of my favorite movies of the year. So
Dear Indugu.
I mean, talk about like just ripping my heart out, man. The end of About Schmidt gets me every time. So
yeah, great. Well, okay. So we are having a great conversation. I feel like early morning might be our sweet spot for, you know, let's get the day rolling. I'm excited to go out there and find out what, that's what I said about, I love about being an artist is that every day I wake up and I'm like, what can I do today? You know, it's like, you have this blank canvas every day. This is a cool way to start the day, to talk about this stuff, to, you know, get excited about different things. And I would end it with my, I don't want to cut you off if you have anything else to talk about, but I was going to end it with my song pick of the day. And then we can go and enjoy our creative lives and then come back next two weeks and talk about our next film.
I mean, I'm all for the morning stuff. You could start your day, create some art, hump some trash. The life is your canvas. So
yeah, totally.
Let's hear it. What are you listening to?
So I've been thinking about, like, there's nothing really current right now that I'm listening to. I could, you know, plug the Play My Tees because they've been very good to me in giving me some work. But I think I did, we did add something to the playlist earlier this year. So I'm going to say, great, Play My Tees record is out. And go check it out. It's really cool. It's kind of like, I think you said you listened to it, right?
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
And those are my buds. And obviously Tom is in my band, and Mike will be playing bass with us at the show here, December 16th, that TLB is playing. And I'm going to tell you, because
are there still tickets for that?
There are still tickets. Very few though. I think it's almost close to sold out. So if anybody's listening and wanted to go, I would get them.
Go pick them up.
Yeah. Cause I think it'll at least day of, you know, like with walk-ups and stuff, that'll sell out. The TLB has a Christmas song coming out here in just about 12 days. Full honesty with me, like, we were wanting to do a full record, but with Tom being so insanely busy, I haven't seen him this busy in a while with the Plain White Tees. We just had to put that on the back burner. But that's the cool thing about TLB is that, you know, we can pop into there anytime. We've got like 40 songs written, so there's not going to be any, you know, world where, as long as we're still living and breathing, we wouldn't put, you know, a new record out at some point. It's just that right now we're busy. So, but we wanted very much to do a Christmas song, because we do that every year and it's just kind of fun. So Christmas is for Making Up is what this one is called, and it's going to be out in 12 days. So I don't think you can pre-save it yet. We just submitted it. I finished the artwork a couple days ago, and yeah, we'll start rolling that out and letting people know on Friday. But it's, you can't listen to it right now. So that's my music news before I tell you my pick of the week. And that is, I really wanted, because we don't have any Elliott Smith on the podcast playlist yet. And I just, I've been thinking about Elliott Smith a lot. There's a lot around here. I've talked about it before in Los Angeles. He's like everywhere. I live right, literally a 1 minute walk to the Elliott Smith mural from Figure Eight.
Hell yeah.
And, he had lived in the, what I think they call, I forget what they call it, but he had lived right down the street from the Gelsons, which used to be the Disney, studio where they made Snow White and everything. And, they call them the Snow White cottages. And, he had lived in those cottages, and rumor has it that there's like an upstairs kind of attic where he used to write his songs. And like, that hasn't been touched since he like lived there. That was also where Mulholland Drive was filmed. All of like the, little cottages, those are right literally down the street from me. So everywhere I look, he's always kind of around, and always in October, I get a little like, you know, when you get into Elliott Smith, like, that's the other cool thing about art, is like, you can bring yourself into a vibe, you know. It's very melancholy. It's very like, you kind of have to be in a mood for it, I guess. But it's beautiful too. And that's it's like a beautiful tragedy, this man, and his music. And so, yeah, I really wanted to add something, and there's a million songs that I could add. But I wanted to add Somebody That I Used to Know, which is a very popular song from him, from Figure Eight. And yeah, I could put a million, but I landed on that one because in October, it's always crazy. I was about to say that he had died in October here in LA in Echo Park, I think. And so it's always like, damn, like, I'm just like kind of close to these things, or living in this world of like time gone by when Elliott Smith used to walk down the street, the same streets that I did. And I've been listening to him a lot lately. So like I said, nothing current, but as everybody should know, I would know, I love Elliott Smith, and I just think he belongs on our playlist.
Hell yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of our jukeboxes, that there's always room for artists that we talk about all the time, but maybe not necessarily on there. So that's the beauty of it, being a living, growing organism. Yeah. It's all Figure Eight. That's his 2000 album. Yeah. That album's great. I mean,
yeah. Are you familiar? Are you a fan?
Yeah. I mean, I love Smith. I mean, yeah, he's not one I like put on a regular basis, but like I've been on and off every couple of years with all of his records since.
It's not really a running playlist. So, you know, I wouldn't think you'd be adding it to that.
You mean like a running, like actual exercise song? No.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's not for that. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like maybe I discovered him after Tana Bombs. When Needle
oh, right.
Day was used, I probably sure. listened to a lot of his albums like shortly after that. So, and he's always been one that I go back to. I mean, yeah, he was an absolute beast of an artist. Just like the depth of his songs. So,
yeah,
I'd be happy to revisit some of that. I always liked. I'm just looking at it, Elliott Smith, Either Or, EXO, and Figure Eight. Those are one of the ones that seem to be the most popular. I do enjoy New Moon quite a bit. Also, it's got a lot of B-sides from 2007. I remember really enjoying a lot of that one too. That kind of like ties into a little bit different.
Dude, that one has some songs that are really, really tragic, like A Fond Farewell, which is just obviously about him killing himself, which is shocking when you listen to it now, knowing the tragedy of that. But EXO, the first song that I had ever heard from him was Waltz Number 2, and it was like blowing up in like the 1990s, late 1990s. And again, without the internet, I don't know how we even heard anything word of mouth, I guess, with everything. But like back then, I could tell you like lead singers and all of their stories and like, you know, their bands and their bandmates and everything without the use of the internet. I don't know how that happened, but like with all those Lookout Records bands and everything, it was just like, I just fed into that all the time. And it was shocking. I met Dr. Frank from Mr. T Experience in 2010, and we had a beer together. And when I was talking with him, I was telling him all these things that I had known about him, or he's like, how do you know all this? You know, it was like, I don't know. I'm a fucking fan. And like, you know, that's all we did at school is talk about that stuff. Kind of like what we do with the podcast. It's the new way of doing it, I suppose.
Yeah. Objectively, it's just sometimes how people's brain works. It's that you just take information in. Some stuff is going to stick more than others. For me, stuff that I don't even have to examine too much about movies just will stay with me. And I couldn't tell you the next thing about certain politics, even if I tried. So
yeah, how about that?
It just works like that sometimes. And then yeah, with pre-internet, that is an interesting thing. It's like, I mean, yeah, like us working at Suncoast, that's what we look forward to, is like that's largely where we got our movie recommendations, literally just talking to who you knew. And luckily we were talking to people that we trusted, and that's where we kind of got it. If it wasn't from like, there were obviously mainstream publications, you could look at magazines and whatnot before the internet, but like it was largely, like you said, word of mouth, especially with more underground stuff. And that's a little bit more so with music. It's like musicians and songs and whatnot that thrived entirely because people loved it and wanted to talk about it and wanted other people to listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said.
Love it. Great pick. It's time for Elliott Smith revisit anyway. It's been a couple of years since I listened to him, so appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I'm going with The Hives. I was lucky enough to see The Hives at the Bottom Lounge a couple weeks ago here in Chicago. Fucking awesome show. I had such a great time. And it was actually the first time, I didn't realize, I thought I'd been to the Bottom Lounge before, but I had never been there for a full show. Perfect size venue. Absolutely perfect size venue for a band like The Hives. Just like such
sold out. Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely sold out. And it was packed, but you know, certainly not uncomfortable at all, but like everybody was like so respectful for like as raucous of a show they put on. Such a great time. I had to look up the last time I saw them. It was in 2004. I saw them at the Metro, so that it was the first time seeing them since then, and they just still have the exact same energy, because that's a show that has always stuck with me, because they're a band I've always loved. And I was mentioning to you this a little bit about AI, and so I watched that Beatles music video with the AI created. It was just like, oh my, like I don't even know what is going on in this world. It was just like, yeah, fun to watch, but like, oh, is that the death of rock and roll? Rock and roll has been something that's been dying for a long time, you could say, but it always comes back. But like, this was actually a video of like, oh, you can actually use this as the last nail in the coffin of rock and roll. And then that same week, I go to see the Hives live in concert. And it's like, no, it's an energy that'll never die. And like I was kind of saying to you, it's like, I think AI will kind of, a silver lining will be a little bit more in-person art, you know, live performances, the experience, not necessarily on a screen or from a speaker, from something that you can actually see and touch, will be the result of a lot of AI stuff coming out. You know, you can only take in so much stuff on a screen that you know is created by a computer, but then when you actually experience it firsthand, like seeing the Hives play, it's looking like it's recuperating my faith in that type of art and rock and roll. So
awesome. I had heard that show was amazing. Another friend of mine had gone to it too, and I read recently that they were talking about franchising the Hives. You hear about this?
The MO of Howlin' P is the, I mean, that's part of their persona, is that they're just we're the greatest rock and roll band in the world. They've been saying that since day one in the 90s, and that's just kind of the persona that they go with. So a franchise, whatever that means, kind of makes sense in their personas, I guess.
Yeah, like, so, you know, the Hives never die. Like, you know, you can see them anytime in the history is like you franchise going to see the Hives, like, and it would be the exact same experience as seeing the original band. That's, I think, the idea.
I'll have to look a little bit more into what that is, but that just, I love his persona on stage. It's just like, we're the greatest. You're here to see us. We're here to put on the best show possible for you. It's just like, they have a commanding presence on stage and in their music, and it's fucking great. So
awesome. What song are you choosing? Is it from the new record?
It is. I mean, again, you know, the Hives are, you know, kind of like you're saying with L.A. Smith, or more appropriately, kind of like with the Ramones. They've never made a bad album. Never made a bad album with multiple songs that I absolutely love. So there is no album that I like more than the others. Tyrannosaurus Hives from 2004 is probably, if I had to pick one, that would be the one I would love the most. But I'm going with a new song from The Death of Randy Fitzsimmons. That's the record that they just put out in the last couple months. And the song is Smoke and Mirrors. It's definitely, they're more punk kind of rock and roll formation. I actually hear a little bit of Ramones kind of like in just in the structure and the execution of it. So it's kind of one that's always stuck out with me. Very catchy song. Absolutely love it. The whole record kicks ass, but yeah, that's the one I'm going with today. Smoke and Mirrors.
Yeah. I've been meaning to listen to that record. I don't know. Like so many people have been like, dude, this new Hives record, you got to listen to it. And I've never like been a gigantic fan of the Hives. I remember when they first came out, I kind of thought I was like, is this like a cheap, like Strokes rip off band? They've stood the test of time, of course. And they obviously are legendary at this point. So I'm excited to listen to it. This will be a good introduction to the new record for me.
Hell yeah. I mean, yeah, they were part of the garage rock revival that the Strokes kicked off, but I mean, they certainly predated the Strokes and were doing their own thing and their own style very early on. And they just kind of benefited by that kind of rock revival. And again, their consistency is becoming their strength. I mean, this record is as good as all their previous ones. They've never made a bad record. So you can really start with any of their records, and their sound has not really changed that much, which is their strength also, I think. So you can start anywhere with them and, you know, have a good time. Definitely, like I said, just with AI creating a Beatles music video, I'm like, I need some genuine rock and roll in my life to keep my spirits going. And so that's also why I'm looking forward to the TLB live show. So.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. No pressure.
Right. I know. Rock is dying unless you fucking bring it back, Darren.
Okay. Yeah. I'm practicing over here. I promise to put on as mediocre of a performance as we can.
Well, that's all I'm asking for, just for your effort. So,
yeah. Yes, yeah. Sir.
Love it.
All right, cool. Well, I guess that concludes another episode, 51. We're at 51. It'll be great to see what we choose next. Thanks for entertaining my crazy notion of watching Trash Humpers. definitely, as this podcast does, introduces us to some stuff that we never thought we'd be talking about. I never thought I'd see a movie like that. I'm sure you didn't either. And here we are having a great conversation about it.
Well, I mean, the preacher in the choir of Harmony Korine, I'm going to keep it going. Love it.
Hell yeah. All right. Sounds good, Pat. Well, hey, thanks everybody for listening. Follow us along on our socials. We're everywhere. Remainderspod.com is the hub. And yeah, let us know what you think of Trash Humpers. God, that was fun to have a conversation about with you guys. And we'll see you next time.
All right. All right. See you, bud.
See ya.